for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. President Roosevelt's New Deal sought to put Americans to work, including artists. As his close advisor Harry Hopkins said at the time, artists have to eat too. Roosevelt's Public Works of Art Project was the first federal government program to support the arts nationally. Roger Kennedy, former director of the National Park Service, has written a book about art and the New Deal. It's titled When Art Worked. Roger Kennedy joins me in the studio. You can join us as well. 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. You can also join us through Facebook and Twitter. Good morning to you, Roger. It's good to see you again.
Good morning, Diane, and you.
I think art always works, but it certainly worked within the New Deal.
The most moving thing about re-encountering these people of my youth was the degree to which they worked for our country and were thrilled to do it. This isn't about our helping them. It's about their participating with us in not the work of depression, but the work of exhilaration and finding ourselves together.
Who came up with the idea of putting artists to work within the New Deal?
As you said, it was sort of obvious that Harry Hopkins would point out that they eat like everybody else. And as somebody else said, they don't eat in the long run, in the short run. But it also was true that Franklin Roosevelt all his life was interested in what art could do to help us do something which Goodson Borglum, the sculptor at Mount Rushmore, wrote to Harry Hopkins in a note that Hopkins carried in his wallet for the rest of his life. And he said, "The work of art is to help to coax the soul of the nation back to life." That's pretty serious business.
Whoa. Yeah. Pretty powerful statement. The idea of the arts was just one of the projects within this New Deal of putting people back to work. But I wonder whether the president at the time encountered some pushback thinking about the arts.
Oh, sure. Of course, the sense of what art is was for him, and I hope for us, pretty inclusive. It's everything that the CCC did that was good, everything the WPA did that was good. It was finding the folk music that we had forgotten. It's what the Lomaxes and Pete Seeger did. That's how we found ourselves again. And we also found the places we care about. That's what the National Register, established at the same time, was all about. That's finding the places in which we experience life together. It was the process of also rediscovering the marvelous design that we had done as a people in the past. That's what the index of design was about. It wasn't just murals in post offices, which are only 1,100. It was the whole process of rediscovering what people of skill can do when they focus on something.
Now, we should say that your book focuses primarily on arts and architecture and deals only briefly with music, writers, and theater.
Hard to do a book about music. It's easier to do it about something you can see.
Yeah, exactly. You wrote, "The New Deal provided food, it provided work, and with the aid of art, it began to provide hope."
Yes.
"Grounded in common purposes." Talk about the hope.
Well, in the most graphic sense, what Franklin Roosevelt himself sought to do through the specific paintings that he himself encouraged and the themes he encouraged was finding us ways in which we had in the past taken care of each other. There was the post office mural for Hyde Park is about a couple of doctors, Dr. Bard and his brother, taking care of a black guy who has been badly burnt. The mural, for instance, for a mining town in Montana is about getting a guy out of a mine that's been injured. The whole, well, I suppose the most moving thing of all is what you pass under. If you work in the Justice Department and you're going up to the library to find out why it is that you're there to work, you pass underneath a John Stuart Curry mural of a robed judge standing on the courthouse steps, standing off a lynch mob. Now, that's art telling us what we can do when we find hope in the way we work with and for each other.
And demonstrating a history that the country has experienced and now can see, can have a better understanding of because it can see.
Exactly. And I have to go back again to a point you made earlier. And we can hear it. The whole folk life rediscovery, all that wonderful stuff at the Smithsonian, the Library of Congress, that's New Deal stuff. That's because we went out and found out how we had sung to each other when we were sad, when we were glad, when we were trying to sing together. It's the most, the rediscovery of all this, this spirit in this time right now, is a very moving experience.
Talk about some of the illustrations done by David Larkin, Roger.
Well, gosh, in one's middle 80s, one hopes that something nice happens. And this was really a nice thing to happen. I had a phone call, which I didn't expect. And he said, hello there, this is David Larkin. You don't remember me. And I said, sure, I remember you. We worked together 25 years ago. And he said, look, Roger, I've got one more book in me, and I want to do it with you. Mm. This is the best book designer, best designer of a book as a work of art in the world. And he calls up and says, I want to do a book with you. And I say, what do I say? I say, yes.
Of course.
Sure. And then I say, what's our subject?
Yeah.
And then he says, it's how art was useful to the country in the New Deal. And I thought, oh, brother, it doesn't get any better than this.
Yeah.
So David had been all his life, 50 or more years, finding images, photographs, paintings, and things of that kind that he knew had been useful to this country. He was a brand new citizen, and he wanted to find the famous Farm Security Administration photographs, of course, which tell us how we were suffering from the farm depression, but also the paintings that told us who we were and what we could be. So this book is a glorious piece of work because of David Larkin.
You know, I'm looking here at a photograph, a long line of jobless and homeless men who are waiting outside a building to get a free dinner. It's a photograph taken in 1932 in New York. And, I mean, what a time for this book to come out when the jobless rate just dropped from 10.2% to 10%, and at this time it was 25%.
Yes. Friends of mine, one of my best friends, Peter Bernstein, an economist who just died, told me that he encountered the father of a friend of his on the corner of 72nd and West End Avenue selling apples. There were shanties with a whole lot of World War I veterans in them, all the way from 72nd to along Riverside Drive, all the way up to the George Washington Bridge. Central Park was full of shacks, Hooverville. It's very hard to recapture the sense that nothing worked. Nothing worked. Everything collapsed. Everything you put your foot down on fell out from under you. Nothing worked. The economic system didn't work. The farms were in desperate shape. We had drought, which we don't now have. We had real drought and the Dust Bowl at the same time that we had an industrial collapse. Well, what do we do to summon ourselves back? What do we do to re-embolden ourselves? How do we find the covenant again? Well, we are finding the covenant again right now, I believe. I really do believe that we as a people are rediscovering each other and coming together to do serious things together.
Roger Kennedy, he, along with David Larkin, have published a new book. It's titled When Art Worked, The New Deal, Art and Democracy. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Talk about the murals program and how it originally got started.
Well, it's hard again to recover when the post office was the modem of the community. It was the switching station. It was the place where you had to go to get the mail. It's the place where you saw your neighbors. It's what you did on the way to the grocery store. The post office was a different place in the 30s than it is now. It was the place where you came together as a community, as the church had been in many, many places before that, and it still is in many places. Well, if you're going to try to help people find out who they've been for each other, then you ask the community itself to decide what kind of murals you'd like the government to pay for in a place like that. And that's exactly what happened. These were not dictated by some bunch of people in Washington. It was each community decided what it wanted to say about itself. Mm-hmm. Now, it's kind of fashionable these days to be kind of snarly about that and say, oh, well, these are kind of happy things. Well, they're not all that happy, actually, because they do depict many experiences that weren't altogether happy. But wouldn't you want to say something affirmative?
And they did. Roger Kennedy, former director of the National Park Service, new book. It's titled When Art Worked, The New Deal, Art and Democracy. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Welcome back. If you've just joined us, Roger Kennedy is here. He's the former director of the National Park Service. He's now turned his attention to our history. And his new book is titled When Art Worked. It's a big book all about the New Deal, art, and democracy. When FDR, during the Depression, decided that art would be part of the answer to revitalizing the spirit of a nation. And to what extent it worked is very, very apparent in this book. So do join us, 800-433-8850. The book has been illustrated by one of the top illustrators in the world, David Larkin. You can send your email to drshow@wamu.org. You can join us through Facebook and Twitter. Tell me about the money involved for this project, Roger Kennedy, and how the Congress dealt with it.
The Congress initiated a lot of the things that Roosevelt proceeded to drive out the driveway and do slightly other things with.
He was a very clever man.
Herbert Hoover invented the Public Works Administration and the RSC. That's what Harold Ickes took hold of and made them much bigger, and that led from the PWA to the WPA. Congress had, after all, to reappropriate every year. So it was very important that the arts worked in communities all over the country. It wasn't just a bunch of public buildings in Washington. Everybody in every congressional constituency actually got a whole batch of works of art that helped people find each other. This is really the point. This is about a community recrystallizing, about a nation renucleating, finding a new covenant.
But give me an example of some of the projects in some of the smaller communities
sure.
that really worked.
Park Rapids, Minnesota, I happen to know, is a little town close to where I grew up. There are three really wonderful pieces of sculpture up there. I hope people are paying attention to them. They were very, very important when Alonzo Hauser went up there and did them. There are little towns all over this country in which the post office may no longer be a post office, but is something else now. But the murals, thank goodness, are there. The major point I want to make here is that it wasn't just paintings. It really was the WPA and the PWA in which art, meaning the capacity to put discipline, craft to work, manifested itself. It was in the National Park Service, and the CCC did masterworks.
We talked earlier about Harry Hopkins. What about Holger Cahill? Tell
Holger
us
Cahill
about him.
Was an Icelandic kid. His name was not Holger Cahill, but nobody could pronounce, none of the people he needed to get to pronounce could pronounce except Icelanders, his real name. So he was left by his father in North Dakota, just simply deposited on the roadside. Amid a Gaelic-speaking community, so he spoke only Icelandic, and he thereupon worked his way around the world, worked his way up, and became the director of the Museum of Modern Art in New York. How do you like that for a progression? These people really had energy and courage. Holger Cahill directed the tough work of the WPA for the arts, not the nice murals, not the fancy places, not the Custom House in New York, but lots of little towns. 100,000 or more works of art around this country. Now, people got paid, essentially, the minimum wage. They couldn't be, this is about $30 a month, sometimes in the South,
wow.
maybe $50 a month
wow.
in the North. That's because you couldn't compete with free enterprise, so they didn't. People like Cahill and people that worked for Hopkins around the country, of course, had to work with the local politics. You had to get along with the mayor. You had to get along with the Chamber of Commerce. You had to get along with the local labor unions. All of those people participated in the arts program. It was an astounding popular movement.
Here's an email from Brian, who's in Ferndale, Michigan. He says, my uncle, Philip N. Clark, performed in a federal theater project production of Davy Crockett. When and why did the FTP get dissolved? I always understood it was a sort of censorship. By the way, Uncle Phil went on to become one of three actors to play Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons. Oh, I remember that.
Yes, of course. Well, good for you, Uncle Phil. There also was a fellow named Orson Welles, John Houseman.
Oh, my gosh.
Every major actor that didn't have work in 1931 had the experience of finding it and being trained for it through the Federal Theater Project. The end of the FTP, Federal Theater Project, it was not so much censorship as it was the simple exhaustion of these programs at the end of the 30s and the appearance of another set of necessities in the Second World War. Many of these programs stayed, and some of them, the WPA, you know, still exists. It's inside the General Services Administration or whatever it's now called.
But what does the WPA do at this point?
Not very much that's very noticeable.
Not very much, yeah.
Just as the CCC, which needs to be reconstituted, probably under a brand new name, also is necessary for the same kind of reasons, for education, for decent nutrition for people, and for good work and good training.
Talk about the Civilian Conservation Corps, Roger.
That was a program that Roosevelt instituted as governor of New York, and it didn't have capital letters. It was just what it was, civilian conservation. It planted a whole lot of trees. When he came to Washington, he brought with him Henry Morgenthau, who wasn't a Treasury type. He was a conservation type. And they reconstituted it as a way of helping young people not just get shovels in the ground. Many of them had never had decent food. Many of them had very little education. Many of them had no opportunity of any kind to get anything other. So what the CCC did was to help in education. It got decent food in people and the habit of decent food. It gave them work, yes, you bet, and they sent most of the money home to keep the family going. That's 400,000 people to start with, more than that later. The extraordinary thing, and that needs to be emphasized, is that the work was elegant and very fine. If you go to Timberline Lodge, which is a CCCWPA project in near Portland, Oregon, you could just sort of see American craft at its very best. But you can see that up and down the Taconic. You could see it up and down the Marriott Parkway. Those WPA and CCC projects are splendid. It was both heroic and necessary.
That's a lovely way to put it. We have a great number of callers waiting, so if you'll put those headphones on, we'll open the phones, 800-433-8850. Your calls, your questions for Roger Kennedy on his new book. It's titled, When Art Worked, The New Deal, Art and Democracy. Let's first go to Jonathan, who's in College Park, Maryland. Good morning to you, sir. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Thank you.
I took a 20th century art history class in college that really opened me up to an amazing amount of...
Jonathan, I'm sorry. I hear your child in the background, but I'm afraid what it's doing is drowning out your voice. Could you speak a little louder, please?
I'm sorry about that. I'm a stay-at-home dad, so...
Sure, good for you. Go right ahead.
But I became exposed to an artist in particular that just, I thought, educated me and just blew me away with his style, and it was Thomas Hart Benton, mm-hmm. who, as I understand, did a lot of work in that period with the WPA. And I've always been curious to figure out what happened to him and to find more of his work. It seems like a lot of it has disappeared or...
All right.
You can find a lot of wonderful Benton in Indiana. You can find a lot of wonderful Benton in New York at the New School. You can find it, of course, most particularly in Missouri, where Harry Truman actually put a brush on a Benton painting as he was painting it. Truman and Benton became pals. There are excellent books on Benton. You picked a really good painter. He was dandy.
Jonathan, thanks for calling to Birmingham, Michigan. Good morning, Jack.
Thank you so much. Some years ago, I bought at the auction three wonderful murals that were maquettes for murals for the post office. These were apparently attributed to someone named Mosley. I couldn't remember the name that well, but they didn't have a signature on them, but the first one shows the image of the postman always delivers, and shows a postman coming up, and the farmer is standing there with his wife and the family all waiting for the delivery of the mail. And in the background, you can see the city. And the next one shows the wolves of hunger in one side, and on the other side, you can see the hope of the future and the image of the Emerald City of the U.S. Capitol. And the one shows the wonderful bounty of what farmers produce and the farm. It was all very propagandistic art, and they were maquettes for murals for the post office, obviously. And I always wondered, is there any record of where or if any of these things were actually commissioned and completed? And if there is, where do you find it?
Sure. There are very good books on the post office murals in particular. There were many maquettes made, of course, for competition drawings. And what we can't be sure of is that what you're speaking of actually made its way into a finished work. But there are very good books. Virginia Mecklenburg, M-E-C-K-L-E-N-B-E-R-G, has done one very good book of that kind. Go Google for
Post office murals, or for Virginia Mecklenburg.
Absolutely. Sure. I hope that helps, Jack.
That's good. And so you're saying that they kept the maquettes were made, but they were never actualized.
No, there would be many competition maquettes made drawings made, and somebody would be picked. Sure.
Some would were selected. Used, yeah. Okay.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thanks, Jack.
Yeah.
To Cleveland, Ohio, and to Jerry, you're on the air.
Good morning. I joined the show a little, well, I had it on, but not loud enough to actually hear it. And something that I studied and I wanted to bring up was that during the Dust Bowl and the Depression era, the government hired photographers throughout the country, Dorothea Lange from Cleveland, Ohio, Walker Evans, and they photographed how people were living at the time, and being the humanitarian that I hope we all are to some extent, it can leave such an impression on people to be able to see what other people are having to live through, and not through TV, but just documented.
Jerry, you're so right. And indeed, in Roger Kennedy's new book, there is that most famous photograph of Dorothea Lange, which speaks to precisely what you're talking about. Roger Kennedy is here. His new book is titled When Art Worked. And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Roger Kennedy, talk about Dorothea Lange's famous photograph.
Sure.
And how she got it.
Well, she had a marvelous way of making people feel at ease. So there's extraordinary intimacy of the things that she brings to us. She brought to a public that in the cities didn't have any comprehension of how dreadful circumstances were in the countryside. So she and Arthur Rothstein, Ben Shawn as a photographer, Eudora Welty as a photographer, were sent out to tell us about ourselves by Rexford Tugwell and the famous Roy Stryker, who mobilized them. Their job was to tell us what we needed to help with. The Farm Security Administration did two things. It helped people stay on the farm and help them manage with the difficulties of drought, and it also helped to resettle them in new communities when they couldn't possibly make it any longer amid the dust. So what you're looking at is persuasion through truth.
She drove, that is, Dorothea Lange, saw a sign on the road that said, Pea Pickers Camp. Take us from there.
Well, you can imagine that some photographer would just come in and set up and say, aren't you lucky I'm here to take your picture? That isn't the way she worked. She stayed for a while. She got to know the people. The photographs of the woman nursing a child and the other photographs of the other kids standing around, with bare feet, were typical of her work. But it's true that because those photographers, though they worked terribly hard, meant what they were doing, they knew they were serving their country. That's why they did it so well.
It's remarkable. In the book, you tell the story that she saw the sign, Pea Pickers Camp, and then proceeded to drive on. She drove 20 miles.
Right, you are.
And then she made a U-turn.
Yep.
And she saw this woman, and the look on this woman's face truly tells the entire story.
Of course, that's, isn't it, what we hope happens with an artist, that something says inside them, I can't miss this. I cannot miss this opportunity. I've got to come back.
Did that photograph make it quickly? Did it come out quickly? Did it create a stir?
Well, it took two things. It took a marvelous work of art, and it took an artist at reaching people. Roy Stryker's job was to get that thing in print. to get it out there, to get it in Look or Life, to get it in newspapers, to get that out there where people could see it. That's a kind of genius also. And we need to give credit to the folks that make it possible for art to reach the public, too.
Where did his photograph first appear? Was it Life magazine?
I
remember that photograph.
Oh, sure. Well, of course, Diane, you and I have seen it since because it is so good that we tend to see it. My recollection is that it did go into Life because Life was very hungry for what Roy Stryker could provide them. Mm. And that was, of course, at the time of the birth of the Illustrated magazine, which told us for the first time, we didn't have TV, what life was like out there.
Those exciting issues of Life magazine with those photographs, I'll never forget them. Roger Kennedy, his new book, When Art Worked, The New Deal, Art and Democracy. More of your calls when we come back. Stay with us.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the Annie E. Casey Foundation, promoting lifelong family connections for children and youth, on the web at aecf.org. By the Kiplinger Foundation, supporting public understanding of business and the economy. And by the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, your source for what works in public education. Learn more at edutopia.org. This is NPR.
On the next Fresh Air, Robin D.G. Kelly talks about his new biography of jazz pianist and composer Thelonious Monk. Kelly's learned many things about Monk's life, music, and mental health problems. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
Here's a perfectly lovely memory for you, Roger Kennedy. It's from Rose, who says, "Hey, I just want to say how much I used to enjoy the murals I saw in the library when I was growing up. They were all part of the government-sponsored Art of the Depression. They led me to study more history, and I always wondered why such a great program has not continued to the current times. Side note, I always loved the picnic benches and cabinets at state parks when I was growing up. My parents told me they were made during the Depression and how important all of FDR's programs were to their lives. Bring back the program," she says. What do you think of that, Roger Kennedy?
First of all, she's right. The National Park Service is a New Deal artifact. New Deal Park system was put together by Franklin Roosevelt. It was a whole bunch of little separate things administered by the War Department and all kinds of other people. And Franklin Roosevelt saw to it that it was made coherent. So what you see in those benches and things in national parks, we could thank the New Deal for, even if the WPA and the CCC did build them. Now, do we need it again, what we need, again, is a sense of community that is strong enough to permit us to be willing to pay for the reconstitution of the American fundamental compact.
And on that very note, Mary in St. Louis, who is an artist and a Benton fan, says, I can't wait to see this book. Have you sent a copy to President Obama so he can consider it as he ponders how to put people to work in this time of economic stress?
Well, now, that's one of those questions. I did send it to a couple of members of the president's cabinet whom I happen to know, but I don't sort of figure that you send the president of the United States a book. You got to have a little chutzpah to do that. You also have to know that it'll ever get to him, which is another question.
Well, maybe you need a little chutzpah to send this, and maybe you can do that.
Maybe so.
800-433-8850. Let's go to Georgette, who's in Charlotte, North Carolina. Good morning to you.
Good morning. I was hoping that Mr. Kennedy would have a moment to discuss the Historical American Building Survey Program, the living program that's still in existence from the WPA era, and how those wonderful 1930s drawings are a work of art and are at the Library of Congress, and people can still have access to them.
You bet. I did mention that a little earlier, along with the Index of Design and the Folk Life Program. Those are all parts of the same process of rediscovery. The Historic American Building Survey and the Historic American Engineering Survey were simply ways in which we did two things. First of all, we got artists to go out and memorialize these places by doing absolutely wonderful images of them, drawings and others, but we also rediscovered what we'd done in the past as a people. So it's mobilizing the artists to be artists again about artists of the past.
And to Simon in Rochester, New York, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, Diane, and thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
Thank you. I wanted to ask Mr. Kennedy, when I think today of public support of the arts, I immediately think in terms of culture wars and the perception that public support of the art is sort of an elitist kind of thing, as opposed to the idea that art is meant to really push the envelope in an aesthetic way. I'm wondering if you think that there's a distinction between pushing the envelope in that way and shocking people with certain images, as opposed to pushing the envelope by making the public aware of social realities and injustice so that they have more of an understanding of it. And is it that latter kind of pushing the envelope that the artists were supported by the program of Roosevelt engaged in?
What an interesting way to put the question.
Very. In the theater in particular, there was an emphasis upon shocking into comprehension. In the visual arts, that was not nearly so true because the communities themselves controlled to a considerable extent what the subject matter would be, not all of it, but a lot of it. In public buildings, such as the Department of Justice building and the Interior Department building, where the government, so to speak, decided for itself, or at least those presiding over it, there's a lot of shock. There's a lot of shock in the Department of Justice building in the Biddle murals, which tell you about tenements and sweatshops and what the world was like before the law came in to help rescue. But it's an affirmative message. It isn't about, goodness, this is terrible, and let's feel good about saying how terrible things are. It's about, yes, this is terrible, but as a people, we can do something about it. That's the big point. If there's a central message, and nobody ever communicated a central message except by implication, it was, let's get together and get something done here.
What about these photographs? I'm just looking at this gorgeous photograph of the young girl gazing from a window. You can hardly call it a window. It's an opening in a log frame house. These photographs by author Arthur Rothstein.
Yes. That, of course, is us. That is a picture of a black girl looking out of a shack, but it's us looking at each other, it's Rothstein's magic was evoking a sense of our common experiences. He was an urban kid. That image of the rural South is not a sort of natural evocation of the art of a guy from the Bronx.
Right.
But he wanted to help.
But now, going back to Simon's question,
yes.
The whole issue of the NEA and to a certain extent the NEH and how they did sort of make it into culture wars, that one wonders whether those culture wars existed to a greater or lesser extent as this works program went forward.
Oh, sure it did. There were real efforts to whitewash, for example, a Gropper mural that went into the in the Interior Department, not because Gropper did work for left-wing magazines, but because Gropper had black and white hands on the same tools. It was an integrated workforce depicted in a, oh my goodness, mural in the Interior Department. Didn't like that. Congress suggested that was not appropriate. There were real efforts to muzzle the theater project, yes. But the questioner, I think, put the dilemma in the right way. How do you get a message of affirmation and hope and get us to work and coax a nation back to life if you only were facilitating the self-expression of an individual artist? Hmm. Those are quite different objectives. And artists are marvelous people, and we all do our bit. Yet, essentially, the wonder of the New Deal period was that artists felt parts of something much bigger.
You know, it's so fascinating when you think about the Depression. You think about economics, and yet the overall psychological depression that had to be in people's hearts at the time. And these artists were able to move forward through that psychological depression.
Exactly. The creative instinct that leads to doing a piece of work became a creative instinct toward a common endeavor. Olin Dowse, who was one of the very good artists that was mobilized for these purposes, said, we never before or since, except in the Second World War, felt so much a part of our community's life.
Let's go to San Antonio, Texas. Good morning, Bob. Your question for Roger Kennedy.
Good morning, Diane. Good morning, Mr. Kennedy.
Morning, sir.
Morning, sir.
I don't have a question. I just wanted to say I went to a high school built by the WPA. Each room was equipped with pictures that were drawn or painted by artists from that period under the auspices of what you were speaking. I don't think I was much of a student at that time, but those things made a great impression on me. There were pictures of people like Euclid, things I would never have taken away with me. It was only later when we put children in school that I realized that didn't exist everywhere.
Hmm. Yes, sir. It is inspiring, isn't it, to have somebody of real skill give us images that evoke from each of us our better angels.
I thank you for calling, Bob. Here's an email from Marilyn, who's in Arvada, Colorado. She says, throughout history, so much great art was funded by governments and or public institutions. Today, there is a fervent belief that art should be accomplished with zero public funds, that art should be the sole province of the private sector. It seems we see privately funded art all around us every day, on television, at the movies, in magazines. Private art is not suppressed by publicly funded art. It's just that purely private art usually is not very good. Well, people can have differences about that. She goes on to say, could you please discuss public versus private funding of art in relation to quality?
Oh, sure. The NEA and the NEH in its way, because words are art too in their way, have a process in which they have juried competitions. Sometimes it's kind of boring if you really want to get a grant and you're not somebody that the juries love, but at least there's an emphasis on high quality. There always was in the Treasury-managed art programs. That's what the post office murals weren't WPA. They were part of the Treasury art program, different entity, doing a different thing. More often than not, they were commissioned. They were not work that provided work for artists. And they got the very best. The general quality of the Treasury section's mural program is very much higher than that of any museum collection of the 1930s that I know anything about, on average.
Roger Kennedy, his new book is titled When Art Worked, The New Deal, Art and Democracy. And you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. Let's go now to the Florida Keys. Good morning, Mark. You're on the air.
Good morning, Diane. I've been listening to you for years and enjoyed it and got a good education out of it.
I'm so glad.
And Mr. Kennedy took some of the wind out of my sails. I'm a child of the Depression also, and I have very great memories of the old CCC camps. We used to go up the Taconic Parkway, and there was the camp, and it took unemployed kids off the street and put them to work, and they built beautiful state parks and contributed a lot of things we still enjoy. And when I was going to grammar school, we had a WPA project book called Ripken and the Big Wind. I still remember that. And we had Orson Welles and the Mercury Theater, which she mentioned, and that was that famous War of the Worlds story that scared everybody to death. They thought the Martian invasion was real. And so those were the things that happened in my time. Also, the Miami Herald published a thing, Lessons Learned from the Great Depression, a while ago, and I sent the letter in rebuttal because it didn't mention any of the cures, and the cures were the CCC and the WPA and the PWA.
How do you feel about Social Security, sir?
What's that?
How do you feel about Social Security?
I'm enjoying it.
Yeah,
so am
you
I.
Bet. You bet.
And that's the New Deal also.
All right. And finally to Danvers, Massachusetts. Good morning, Kyle. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning, Diane.
Good morning.
This is the reason why I love your program so much, for programs like this.
Thank
but anyway,
you.
Let me tell you, when I was newly married, I lived in a suburb of Boston, and I went to a town meeting, and it was so crowded that they put the overflow down in the basement, and we couldn't see the speakers. And it was a meeting about whether we could get some government money to help redo the square, the town square. One guy got upstairs and said, we don't need the government coming in here. And a little old guy next to me said, you know who built this town hall that guy's speaking from? The government, WPA.
Well, if we look around this country to see the things that we as a people have done together by the government, which after all is our instrument as a people, we can say to each other, if you believe in democracy, then you believe in democracy's consequence, the government, and what the government can and should be doing for and with us all. If we permit ourselves to be persuaded that democratic government doesn't work, then what are we going to do as an alternative?
There has been that effort to talk about government as an impediment rather than as something to help us grow as a country, to help us move forward as citizens. I would wonder about your thoughts on that.
Well, everything that we try to do together through the entities that we create to do things together under the social compact don't always work. Diane, I just brought along with me three sentences from Lincoln, which I think respond to that better than anything I could cobble up. So if you don't mind, I just think this does it, if it's okay. I do the very best I know how, the very best I can, and I mean to keep on doing that till the end. If the end brings me out all right, then what is said against me won't amount to anything. If the end brings me out wrong, 10,000 angels swearing I was right would make no difference. We just have to try.
Roger Kennedy, he's former director of the National Park Service. He's director emeritus at the Smithsonian's National Museum of American History. His new book titled When Art Worked, The New Deal, Art and Democracy. Congratulations, Roger.
Thank you, Diane.
So good to see you. Thanks for being here. And thanks all for listening. Have a great day. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, Denise Couture, and Monique Nazareth. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information.